This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Boston College, a winner by 20 over Pittsburgh yesterday. Clemson beat NC State by 6. Louisville, a 10-point winner last night over Georgia Tech. Winners advance and losers go to the airport. Today, average action starts at noon. First two games this afternoon are on ESPN at noon. Dan Shulman, Jay Billis have Florida State, Syracuse, and then Boston College, Wake Forest. Tonight's games are on the Deuce. Can we still say that? Probably can't say the Deuce anymore. ESPN2, right?
What is that, politically incorrect?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Sometimes
I get that memo.
I get caught up on the marketing sometimes. Like I was told last week, I'm not supposed to say family of networks anymore.
Is that right?
That's why I just there was
no longer a family.
Well, I don't know. Clemson, Clemson, Virginia Tech at 7 o'clock on
ESPN2.
Do I need
to call my friend Jimmy and straighten this up?
Well, I don't know.
Let's
save that for later.
Well, when you need me to make the call,
I'll let you know. Louisville and Virginia. That's the nightcap. Dave O'Brien, Corey Alexander have the call for you from Brooklyn at the New York Life ACC tournament. A special on this date, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. No question. Legendary day in ACC history.
Absolutely. Now, tell you what, hard to believe we're 2 years away from the 50th anniversary of a game. This is a game. It's not just ACC game-changing. This is NCAA game-changing. This game impacted college basketball as you know it today. In fact, the expansion of the tournament, all sorts of things, you can point back to this game. March 9th, 1974, the Greensboro Coliseum, 1-4. NC State, Maryland.
That wasn't seeds.
No, that was national.
Right. And yeah. That's seeds.
NC State, Maryland, and the Wolfpack wins 103-100. And in case you need a refresher, it's a game that Billy still talks about.
Rebound is by Elmore, who hooks.
All of the individual battles were fun to watch, and everybody is playing to the top of their game.
That's David Thompson.
It's almost like the whole game was a game of great plays.
There goes Howard now, and Tao gets free. Beautiful group. To Thompson.
Here's how much was on the line, and they all delivered. Every guy that was on that floor delivered.
There's the pass to Thompson.
Both teams lived up to the billing. I mean, both teams.
That's McMillan. Tied it up. Monty Tao. State goes back in the lead.
An incredible game.
McMillan. Locked down by Tao.
I just didn't want to see anybody lose the game.
Lucas on town. Lucas beats him. Absolutely beautiful play.
You wanted it to keep playing for the rest of our life.
Yep. It's the only way to describe it. That was just, the game was so ridiculous how great it was and what was at stake. Winner goes to the NCAA tournament. Loser goes to the couch.
Can I offer you this at 48 years? We celebrate the 48th anniversary of this thing today. Can I tell you it's got staying power where it's still the singular best ACC tournament basketball game 48 years later? And here's the thing. I mean this in all honesty. It might not be close.
Well,
89 Duke Carolina is probably in the neighborhood, but that's what I'm saying.
The thing that's so great about it is that this is a league loaded with great games,
correct,
great teams,
yes,
great players, great coaches, and we still go back 48 years as the standard. It's all you need to know. You pick your favorite team. I don't care what team you root for in this league. That game right there was the standard. Still is. Still is.
It's nuts, isn't it?
It's crazy. So fantastic.
I mean, the fact we're talking about something that happened 48 years ago, still being that thing,
But Wes, what separates it though is if those teams were today, you'd still have a great game. But they're both going to the tournament.
Right.
They're
yeah.
both going to be probably
Number one seeds. Yeah.
Maybe one drops to a two seed. That era was, hey, here's what's at stake. Everything. Everything's at stake. You can't be bad.
Right.
And as Billy pointed out, both of them were great. Not good. Great that night.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing about it, and like Billy said, I wish they were still playing, is that those were two teams that whoever lost that game was going to sit there at home and watch the rest of the NCAA tournament and go, we should be in it.
Right.
We should be playing. We're as good as the team that just cut down the nets. It was that fantastic.
To give you a little lateral thinking on this, not comparisons, thinking. 3 years ago in Charlotte, we came away from that ACC tournament on a Saturday night where Duke beat Florida State, and we had three number one seeds the next day in the NCAA tournament. Two of those number one seeds didn't play in the finals. Only Duke did. So Duke didn't even beat a fellow number one, Virginia or Carolina, in the finals. Now, Florida State beat Virginia. Duke beat Carolina in the semis. In this particular game in 1974, you had two of the top four teams in the country. Now, it's arguable that Carolina and Virginia and Duke were all worthy of those number one seeds. You know how that gets this time of year. But we're talking about not only two of the four best teams in the country playing, we're now talking about two of the four best teams, period, like overall, and one doesn't go. That's the – and by the way, all the rules changes that occurred, the expansion of the tournament, the more than one from a league, all that Walter Byer stiff-collar attitude in Kansas City that used to exist with the NCAA, that stuff got blown out the window after this game because – even the NCAA realized they were making a major mistake.
That is accurate. I can't add anything else to that. And that's what separated that era from where we are today. Doesn't mean that, you know, these guys today, people, no. You can't compare eras.
Right, we're not that.
But the standard of the game was unlike anything we've ever seen, given what was at stake.
Also on this date, 1986, Mike Krzyzewski won his first Atlantic Coast Conference. Whoa! The youthful Michael William Krzyzewski from Chicago. 68-67 against Spider Sally in the alley with the Dunkaroo and the Jackets of Georgia Tech. There's Johnny Dawkins. Look at the tournament titles. Wow.
Would you say he's been lucky, Wes? I'm just curious. All you guys love to use the luck factor. You think he's been lucky there?
I think it's really about winning right here.
Now you're coming around to my way of thinking.
It's about winning.
That's exactly right.
86, 88, 92, 99. And then 99 begins the sequence of five in a row. And, of course, you see five and six thrown in behind there. And the documentary the other night talked about the streak being snapped in 07.
Not going to surprise me if you see 2022 on that list.
Yep.
Not going to surprise me at all.
No, I'm with you on that part. So congratulations to Coach K. Anniversary date of that. Blue Devils play tomorrow at noon against the winner of Florida State Syracuse. Uh-huh. Yep. Speak. Okay. Something to remember today. If
you were agreeing with yourself over there, yeah. I was just wanting to know if there was anything else I need to know.
Syracuse, Florida State.
Okay.
Winner meets Duke. All right.
Got it.
Couple things here to remember about today. Teams that win today can have success. Now, you say, well, what's the measurement of success? In my opinion, if anybody from yesterday or today wins a game and gets to the semifinals, that's a success. It also constitutes what many would think to be an upset. Because why? Typically the NCAA measures that as five spaces in the bracket. You know how it goes sometimes on those. So we're talking about teams. No, if you won yesterday or today, you're going to be, let's say if it's Florida State, Syracuse, BC, Clemson, Louisville. What's the chances of any of those teams advancing into the quarterfinals? Well, since the ACC in 2006 went to an 11-game format, the upsets have not been as prominent as you would think. NC State, oh, turn your eyes, Macri. 2014, Syracuse was the two seed. NC State, as the seven seed, beat the Orange. I'll call your attention down to 2010. That's when things got a little off the rails. Georgia Tech beat Maryland. They ultimately lost to Duke in the finals. Miami beat Virginia Tech. They lost to Duke in the semis. And NC State beat Florida State, who then lost to Georgia Tech in the semis. That was a little bit of an upheaval. But rarely do you see anybody 8 or lower advance through the quarterfinals into the championship. So we'll keep an eye on it. Going to be interesting to watch. Marcus proclaimed, and rightly so, there's a left and a right. I don't expect any of this to occur this week in Brooklyn.
Well, that's why we do keep score.
Yep.
You know, that's the beauty of sports, to watch how this stuff unfolds. However, I would just think that given what we watched for a regular season in this league on the men's side,
mm-hmm.
The haves and the have-nots, there was a discrepancy, major discrepancy.
Yeah.
So if somebody on the right side of the standings ends up pulling this thing off, it would be a major, major headline.
Yeah.
And again, take it for whatever it's worth.
Top seeds have won the event 32 times in conference history. Only 8 times, however, since 2000. You can look here and see that the 3 seed has had as much success as anybody else. 3 seed this year is Carolina. 10 times they've won it. You can also see that Duke became the first and only 5 seed. There used to be the curse of the 5 at this event until the Blue Devils ran through it in Brooklyn in 2017 and won the event. In fact, number 6 has always been an interesting spot. The 6 seed has won this event 5 times, most recently 1993 with Georgia Tech.
Now, see, NC State up there in 1980.
Maryland 04, I should say, sorry.
See, NC State up there in 1987. I'll go back to the documentary. I thought it was phenomenal. I just wish I had a little dose of the NC State 87 run.
Benny Bolton.
Just me. That's just my personal opinion.
Russell Pierre.
I mean, the upsets, the overtime wins to get to North Carolina and then win that thing in Maryland.
Was Pato Fasulis on that team? The big Greek center that Valvano had?
All I know is that was an amazing run by the Wolfpack in 87.
Yeah, no question about Capital Center.
That's right.
Yeah. Arguably the best semifinal day. We talked about that. One of the best semifinal days in tournament history.
I thought is the history of this tournament.
Yep.
It was one of the most remarkable tournaments, and I think the Lord agrees with me.
Damn, rain's getting ready to roll in here now. I'm not a meteorologist. But that's thunder. Hadn't heard it like that since we've been doing the show.
Watch out. You know, but we don't have to worry. You know why? Because there's 2 things ESPN does better than anybody else on the planet. Told you this. Sports generators. We got a generator. Jimmy gave the thumbs up.
Jimmy,
the Packer household, to have the generator. My friend Jimmy said, "Yep,
yeah,
put the major industrial strength generator down there at the Packer house."
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a apparently stormy Wednesday morning.
Apparently.
Here. In the Queen City of Charlotte. No, I wouldn't open up that door, big man.
Wow.
I wouldn't go there.
I'll tell you. Doesn't look good.
No, because I
think we're going to have to play it lift, clean, and place.
I don't think that. That door opening up during the program means the dogs go zipping out.
No,
there could be
fine.
Some coyotes.
Nobody moved
in the backyard
there.
Like the other night.
We're good.
Okay.
All right. You ready for this?
I am.
Ever since I heard this last week, I've been thinking of you.
It was a radio topic the day it came out,
yeah,
I can assure you.
There is a proposed rule change that would allow conferences to appeal targeting fouls in the second half, and we've also got to solve the players faking injuries in order to avoid a carryover of sitting out the first half of the next game. The NCAA Football Rules Committee announced this last Friday. If a team believes a targeting call was erroneous, the conference would be allowed to submit a request to the national coordinator of officials. And for my money, the guy who was the best on-field football official in the country when he retired and went to administration was Steve Shaw, who now runs the whole boat. If it's obvious the player was incorrectly penalized, the call would be overturned and the player would be cleared for the first half of the next game. The committee also proposed a reporting and investigation process on teams that are awarded an injury timeout when a player is believed to have faked an injury. More on that in a moment. This eerily sounds similar to soccer in Europe, where a yellow card or a red card can be rescinded after it's awarded during the course of a game and the player's not suspended for the next game. However, this goes back to what you talk about, where we're now going to extend this entire process. We're not eliminating the process or making it more efficient, I guess.
This is a perfect example of overthinking the situation. It's a perfect. The last thing we need is a further investigation. That's what the first problem is. We're wasting so much time looking under the hood. Somebody make a call. I'm going to simplify it, Wes, and make this really easy. There, to me, is a big difference between somebody who's trying to target and somebody who's trying to mock, right?
Yeah.
There's two differences here. There's somebody who's trying to lay somebody out to hurt them, and then there's somebody who's trying to make a football play that happens to put their helmet down.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we do this? Instead of overthinking it and having officials go to the monitor, and then somebody back at headquarters control spend 5 to 10 minutes and the game reach a screeching halt and people complain that the football games are too long. Here's an idea. How about you throw a flag and it's 15 yards? 15 yards.
Mm-hmm.
We're not throwing anybody out of the game.
Right.
It's 15 yards. And you know what? If they do it again, then you can sit there and say, well, you got to go sit out the second half. End of story. End of story. We're not throwing anybody out of games. And these kids work too hard.
Right.
Too hard to make a bang bang play trying to make a tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden they're penalized. Oh, you got to be out of the game. And now they want to talk about having an investigation. What? How much time do you think you've got here? Eliminate the clitter. I mean, we got so much nonsense here that's going on between investigations. What did you have, Bob? I don't know, Joe. Let's talk to Susan. Susan, what'd you? We're not sure. Let's go over here and look under the monitor. Forget that nonsense.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
There was a big difference between somebody trying to make a football play and somebody who's trying to embarrass to take somebody out. I don't understand why this has gotten so complicated. It is the most inconsistent call every Saturday in college football. And it's inconsistent not only within your league, from league to league, but from half to half. In the same, and again, I'm not ragging the officials. It's a hard job. And this is the hardest call. It's these guys are bigger, stronger, faster than ever before, and you got to make a split decision of guys trying to make a football play. So let's make it an easier call, not a more difficult call, by creating an investigation to see if maybe you can get that time back next week. No, let's not even do any of that. Let's not do any of that. Make a call. If you think, hey, Durham hit Packer in the head, there's 15. Okay, Durham, you've been warned, boom, boom, boom. Next time, hey, we got a problem. You can't do it twice. You can't do it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Forget this investigation and all this nonsense. And the other thing with the faking of the injuries, I have the easiest solution in the world. This is so easy. I can't believe they didn't come up with this. If somebody goes down with an injury, whether they're faking it or not, he sits out the entire duration of the series. Period. If he's hurt, he's not coming back in anyhow. If he's faking it, well, guess what? You're not coming back in this series. And if that team goes on a 15-play drive, well, then you sit your rear end over right there for 15 plays.
And that means probably somebody has to be assigned a role as a spotter for game management, which,
right,
you know what? You just add one more person.
Why is this hard?
I don't understand that part at all, because for me, you're on the right path. The guy comes off the field, hurt or not, you miss the rest of the series. If he's really hurt, he's going to miss a lot more. If
exactly.
he's not, he'll then come back the next series,
exactly,
and that'll clean it up. Second part of this becomes the targeting piece. I do believe that the on-field rulings are inconsistent. I think you're right about half-to-half, let alone game-to-game, week-to-week.
Right.
Are we not putting enough former officials who help write and document a lot of these rules to work in video review anyway, right? We've got all these command centers, Greensboro, Birmingham, Chicago, wherever, right? We got all those in place where everybody can look at it. We've got all communicators and everything else. Take the call off the field. Take the call off the field. You've got enough technology. Every game's on television at this level. Put it in play to where the call is made. either on site or by the command center and then administrate it back through the game. Put it out. Take it out of the on-field official's hands.
That's fine if you can prove to me if you can prove to me that they can get that done between a snap.
It may be two plays.
I don't think they can do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure they can either. And it may be two plays after it happened. But take it off the field.
That doesn't work.
Well, the guy has the play, and then let's say he makes the play on first down, and then by third down they whistle down and say they've reviewed it off the field.
Oh no, I disagree with that. Listen.
Pack, the player safety piece is the numbers are showing that it's working. That's the issue.
Working.
That player safety, fewer injuries, all sorts of things are happening.
Okay.
That's the part about this that's non-negotiable.
Yeah, we used to play football, Wes, where guys get hit.
I understand.
I got news for everybody in this football business. It's a physical, violent sport.
That's right.
All right?
Yeah.
This is not patty cake. This is not Pack and the boys are going to go out and play nine holes of golf.
Right. I understand.
You're going to get hit.
Yes.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is big boy football. So, you know, if you're afraid, go buy a dog or a cat. You're going to get hit over the middle. All right?
Right.
So let's cut the nonsense about, we're going to put this under review and then an investigation. That is a terrible idea. All that sounds like to me is, we're going to have four-hour games now?
Well,
really, is that where we want to go?
Well,
because that is another discussion. You want to cut the nonsense?
That's my bigger issue.
Here's an idea. Hey, official, make a call.
No, quite.
Let's quit going under the hood. Make a call.
Let's also work on the clock. We didn't address the clock at all in here. In fact, Steve Shaw said they spent more time talking about the injury situation, the faking of the injuries, than they did the targeting situation.
Well, how easy is that solution? I just gave it to you in 12 seconds.
But they also didn't address the timing of the games.
The faking of the injury stuff, and if you don't think there's not gamesmanship going on, of course there is.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to belittle somebody that gets hurt. I'm not at all. Again, it's a physical sport. You're going to get hit.
Yep.
You're going to get hurt. You can't prevent that. And if a guy goes down and he's got a broken leg, well, guess what? Mm-hmm. We're going to stop the game. We're going to get him off the field. And we're not going to see him again. If a guy goes down because, coach, man, you told me, go down on one knee because, man, we got to slow the game down. They're running 150 plays.
Yeah.
And we're exhausted. Well, guess what, big man? You're going to come off the field, and you're going to stay there until that team's done with the football. Now, if you get them three and out, hey, you go back the next time in the next series. Eliminate the – everybody overthinks the rules.
Yeah.
Make it simple. I don't get it.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Tons and tons of guests between now and 10 a.m.
Yeah, boy. You know what they say? When news breaks out, we break in, right?
Is that what it was?
Well, you know, that was maybe not our line. That was somebody, a big high-paying consultant got that one. But, you know, last week there was a little bit of news made when this gentleman had the head basketball coach of the Syracuse Orange, Jim Boeheim, on his program. So let's go to Central New York's most trusted voice in sports, multimedia platform journalist star Brent Axe joins this program. Hello, Brent. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Wes, that sounds like something a consultant wrote right there. Central New York's most trusted voice. I'm going to steal that one from you. That's good.
Brent, you have to be the most trusted voice because you have a Chia Pet box behind you.
That's right. That's right. And that's never coming out of the box above my head. God bless my mother-in-law. She got that for me for Christmas. And I said, listen, Ma, I'm not going to take that out of the box. That might be worth about like $6 someday. So let's go.
It's hard to tell whether the Chia Pet or Bruce Springsteen looking over your shoulder is more imposing at this point in the conversation. So there you go. There he is right there, the river. Yeah, well done. Nice. Okay.
What album it was. Well done.
Yeah, the river, no question. If Jim Boeheim's visit didn't make headlines last week with you, I'm not sure what will. You get him into your weekly visit. You have a weekly visit on your program with the coach. He starts talking about secession plans and people know what it is. And when the time comes, we're going to make the decision. I mean, I had never heard of a secession plan. Had you? Is there anybody who was aware of any of this? And what more have you found out postscript, I guess?
Well, I need to make one little correction, Wes. This was not a weekly visit with Jim. This was an impromptu. He called the show right at the top of the show. My afternoon radio show starts at 4 o'clock. So I had just started the show. My producer gets in front of the door, the little window in the door, like the building's on fire. And I'm like, what is going on? And he says, Jim Boeheim's on line one. So, you know, you kind of stop what you're doing when that's the case. And Jim kind of started off with a few other things on his mind. And then during the course of the conversation, he says, there's a plan and it's an ironclad plan. And as he's saying it, I'm like, is he saying what I think he's saying right now? So I kind of followed up a little bit on what he was saying about that. Now, he wouldn't tell us exactly what the plan is, but you said it, Wes. The fact that there's an ironclad plan, in his words, to take over, for someone to take over for him, he said he knew when he's going to walk away, was as revealing as anything. Because usually when you ask Jim about this, it's not his favorite subject in the world, and he just kind of brushes it aside and says, you know, I'm getting ready to coach my team next year, and that's all there was to it. So the fact that there is something ironclad in place is very significant. Now, Jim being Jim, he's still keeping us guessing about when exactly that is. Is it after next season? Is it Adrian Autry or Jerry McNamara taking over? Or is it somebody else? Who knows? Could be Buddy Boeheim and Jimmy Boeheim taking over. We don't know at this point. But that was pretty revealing on Jim's part because, for the most part, you guys have talked to him about it. Everybody's talked to him about it. He'd rather talk about anything else in the world but not coaching.
Brent, let's talk about the team. And today it's Florida State at high noon. I jumped on the bandwagon early. I thought this was going to be a good team. I really did. I thought they're going to be able to score. The zone is still the zone. Could not have been more wrong. This has really been, quite frankly, a big-time disappointment for Syracuse basketball 21-22.
You and me both, Peck. I remember right here on this show, you and me were pretty high on this team. I had the highest number of wins predicted amongst the group at Syracuse.com that makes predictions, and it was for the same reason. I thought this team would just score in bunches and be good enough on defense. Obviously, the athleticism was an issue, defense was an issue, and then injuries became an issue down the stretch here. And we're looking at Jim Boeheim's first losing season in his tenure, 45 years prior to this, not one losing season. They're on the brink of it now. Obviously, if they lose today, they're probably going to finish with a losing season to Florida State. It's going to take a lot to dig out of that hole. It almost felt inevitable in a way. Like, how long can you escape that? It's a credit to Jim's consistency through the years that no matter what, even if Syracuse slipped on a banana peel and went to the NIT, you always knew they'd have a winning season. But to see this happen, and the injuries didn't help, right? Like, this was a team that already had its challenges and its flaws. Jesse Edwards was starting to go on an absolute tear, hurts his wrist. Cymer Torrence is going to be back today, it appears, but that's an injury that didn't need down the stretch. You got Benny Williams, who was starting to come around, played a great game against Duke. He gets a lower body injury, and now Syracuse is – not that Jim Boeheim goes deep on that bench anyway, but they're trying to scrap by with what they have at this point. It's the most disappointing season I think Syracuse basketball fans have seen in a long, long time, certainly since the late 1960s when it's the last time they had a losing record. All right. Jim Boeheim wasn't even the coach then.
Brent, here's the twist to this that I find curious. And forgive me here for ignorance, if nothing else. Buddy has a year left. Jimmy has a year left. Jimmy could appeal for the extra year because of what the Ivy did. So he technically has one. Buddy definitely has one he could play with on the house based on the math I've done. You got Gerard. You've got Benny Williams. You've got Jesse Edwards. Plus, you've done a decent job recruiting. And yet, Buddy and Jimmy are done? I mean, that came from the coach, right? Buddy and Jimmy are done, and they're moving on. Are you surprised at that in the landscape?
I'm not surprised Jimmy's moving on. I mean, he's played college basketball 5 years. He's got a graduate degree, and if he doesn't end up playing pro basketball somewhere, that kid's got a finance degree from Cornell and a grad degree from Syracuse University. He's going to be fine, whatever he does in life. I'm a little surprised Buddy's moving on. It's interesting how his draft stock has gone up and down. I remember talking to a scout. I call him the scout who knows because he's a friend of mine who's an NBA scout. He's always right about the NBA guys. He said Buddy could have got drafted last year. I think that's a little in question this year, even with his status as first team all ACC and ACC's leading scorer and everything. I think people took more time to find the flaws in his game. But look, he's ready to move on and play pro basketball, wherever that shall be. So you've got those two moving on. I don't think the transfer portal is going to hit as hard this year. And, you know, Barama Sidibe is a senior. He moves on, and the players that are naturally moving on that way. So you brought up next year is going to be an interesting mix of returning players. Now, the transfer portal's out there. I guess you got to throw this asterisk on the conversation. But I would certainly assume Joe Girard's back. Symier Torrence is back. Jesse Edwards is back. Benny Williams has already said twice on the record that he's coming back, despite speculation he could transfer. And you brought it up, Wes. There's a top 25 recruiting class coming in next year. And I'm going to be fascinated by that. Jim Boeheim, now I'll believe this when I see it, but Jim Boeheim has already said they could play some man-to-man next year because there's just too many young guys to learn the zone that are going to get into that rotation. And it's going to be a mix of those veterans we mentioned, but a lot of young guys getting the opportunity to play. Players like Chris Bunch, who's a top 100 recruit, mm-hmm. Justin Taylor, who's pretty much a Buddy Boeheim clone, 6'6 guy that can shoot. Judah Mintz is a recruit they're trying to bring in, and I think Syracuse feels pretty good about. He's a combo guard that Syracuse could use, certainly depth at that position. So, boy, Pac, we felt really good about this team coming in this season. I'm fascinated by what next year's team can be, considering all the young guys mixed in with a few key veterans.
Brent, what do you think happens today at noon? I mean, what Syracuse team shows up? One that can make everything they look at and put 95 on Florida State and win? Or one that just looks like Pittsburgh last night that looks like, hey, it's just time to get this thing over with? What happens?
I think Symier being back is huge, Pac, because you've got to take pressure off Joe Girard. You know, with Joe Girard, it's one of two things. He either runs the offense or he is the offense. Mm-hmm. And they need him to be the offense because they need three-point shooting. The problem is Florida State's pressure defense. The first time around, or second time around, pardon me, when Florida State came to the Dome, they put a lot of pressure on Girard. They scored 20 points off turnovers. Florida State even hit a bunch of threes in that game. Caleb Mills was 5 of 6 from the outside. So Syracuse has just got to do what they do, and that's score threes in bunches. Get Girard involved. Buddy Boeheim's got to do Buddy Boeheim things, drop about 25, 26 out there today. And they need Cole Swider back. Swider had that huge day against North Carolina where he dropped 36 points and then disappeared in the next game. But Florida State was one of those games, guys. There's just been and this is the thing, that the spider bite that people are going to think about all offseason. Syracuse just could not execute down the stretch in so many games this year in the ACC. Simple inbounds passes, simple plays. Florida State was one of them. They were within one, and a couple things happened, some bad shots, some turnovers. Next thing you know, Florida State's going down the other way, right, and they win 76-71. So this is a close game. They've got to avoid those late-game situations that have just – it's been unbelievable to see how many times Syracuse has not executed there.
Let me tell you something. Corner baseline inbounds plays for the next 5 years are going to cause shivers in the dome.
That's right. That's right. Don't throw it in the corner.
Two games. Two games, Axe. Two. At Wake, at Carolina.
That's incredible to think about, that in a simple inbounds pass – could be the difference between a winning season and not with this team. I can't even process it. So whatever happens, just pull the Christian Laettner, pull old school reference here, Syracuse fans. Remember Conrad McRae? Just throw the ball all the way down the court. Don't put it in the corner. Just home run pass and see what happens, as opposed to that short little corner pass
awesome
that you brought up.
All right, my man. Great to see you as always. Take care. Still cold up there, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was 75 and sunny here on Sunday, and it was 40 the next day. So, fake spring here in central New York for a day.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen, the most trusted voice in sports, Pac, multimedia platform journalist star, Brent Axe. Thank you, Brent.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. You bet. Wow. How about all that, huh?
Florida State, Syracuse.
Ironclad, Pac, secession plan.
You know, nothing lasts forever. We found that out this week at Cameron Indoor.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Hey, don't forget, coming up on Thursday, we got women's lacrosse. Louisville visits number 7 Duke.
Next Thursday,
next
Wes.
Thursday.
The 17th.
Yeah, the 17th. That's
not
it.
Not tomorrow.
No. A week from Thursday. Thank you. Yeah, that'd be a week from Thursday. That's right. Good call. So next Thursday, March 17th, women's lacrosse, number 7 Duke hosts Louisville. Coverage starts 8 o'clock. It's in prime time for you, Pac, on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app.
Going right up against March Madness.
Yeah. Get that lax all over you.
We got some lax tomorrow. It's going to be big time in this league.
Yeah. Colin Schellenberger, we hope, in moments from Charlottesville. Basketball today at noon on ESPN. Florida State, Syracuse start the activities. Then Boston College, Wake Forest in the afternoon session. And then dinner break for them and for you. And 7 o'clock ESPN2, Clemson and Virginia Tech.
No dinner break for me.
Louisville. Louisville
no
and Virginia.
Me, man. We work during dinner about down
nine,
here. Right
about,
right there.
About
where it all happens for SiriusXM Channel 84. Feet old from where you're at. There's no dinner break down
about,
here. We're working through dinner.
By 9:30 tonight, you'll get the final
maybe
game.
Maybe for you over there in the apartment.
Yeah.
Throwing parties all day long. Oh, no, yeah, we'll be working right over there at SiriusXM off campus. That's where it happens.
Walking
right
party
there.
Right here, aren't we? You can tell. Yeah, there it is. Look at there. Oh, a unique shot
really
of the radio
it.
Home right there. Oh, look in the light. Whoa, hey, turn that off. Turn that off. Turn that off. You never know. But get over there.
Captain Ron, what are you doing
Captain
over there?
Captain Ron messing up things, flying the drone. By the way, how's that drone?
It's right there. It's on the desk.
No. How's the interior drone lessons?
We're still working on it.
Is that going well?
We're still working on the indoor drone.
Yeah.
You know, I've got the blimp down. I can parallel park the blimp. Yeah. I got that thing down
only
a sign. You know I do,
too. The only person living in fear on that is Liz Kittley when you start flying it.
Why was she worried about it?
Because she looked up and she saw you handling the blimp, and you were doing the downward take up toward the Virginia banner.
Oh, yeah. I got to get some momentum. It's like a roller coaster.
Yeah, well, and Liz Kittley was like,
No. I would not do that to the player of the year.
Of course you wouldn't, but she didn't know any better. She just thought you had pummeled the man in charge of the blimp, John Tarwater.
By the way,
I noticed John wanted a little more audio this year around. John was interested. Maybe we mic him up next time.
John, did you notice how comfortable he was now with me in control? Admit it. Admit it.
He was comfortable, but I think he was also looking for more of a pronounced speaking part.
Well, maybe
as if some
year.
Form of compensation might be coming his way
I don't know about
for the
effort. I don't know if it's in the budget. And on top of that, next year, I don't even know if we'll be here next year. That's a whole separate issue.
But
he had a little more confidence in that. So the indoor drone that I'm working on needs some work.
Yeah.
So we're not quite there yet for the show.
Okay.
Getting there, though.
Are you?
I am getting there.
All right. I hear you.
But that's a little more difficult than flying the shoe blimp. It is. The drone's got a little bit more. You got to kind of finesse it. I mean, that thing gets out of control. We got 29 lights in here. Did you know that? We have
29
ESPN.
I told somebody the other day I thought we had like 16.
No, 29.
Holy smokes.
29.
Really?
So you got to be careful. We got two TV monitors, four cameras, 29 lights, $500,000 worth of electrical equipment. And look at it behind us now. See there? Look, we got all kinds of stuff. It looks good behind there with Skeeter's jacket.
Yeah.
Really does.
Yeah.
We got the disco lights on now.
Robert changing the lights. He's in charge of lighting. Captain Ron. Had a moment of weakness a moment ago. He flipped on the radio lights.
Oh, yeah. Be careful of that. Yeah. I don't know what's parked over there on my desk.
Yeah, got to be careful. So you've got all this stuff in play, and now you're feeling confident with the blimp. So what could possibly go wrong?
I'm not feeling confident. I am confident with the blimp. There's a big difference of being, like, I feel like I can hit this shot. No, I know I can hit this shot. Big difference, Wes. It's like going to the free throw line. I feel like I can make two, coach. No, coach, I got this.
Yeah.
Get out of the way. I've got the shoe blimp. Right? I've proven that now over 2 years.
All right, let's go to Charlottesville before we get ourselves in more trouble this morning.
Not in any trouble.
Connor Schellenberger is a star for Lars Tiffany on Virginia's lacrosse team, the defending national champions. Connor, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Thank you guys for having me on.
Absolutely. Appreciate you working with us. Okay, on the road against Carolina Thursday, first ACC game of the year. How you feeling about this?
Definitely pretty exciting being able to go down to Chapel Hill and play under the lights. Carolina's always a great team, and you know we got to play them three times last year, and I think all three games were pretty good. So you know we're definitely pretty excited as a team.
Connor, Lars Tiffany is one of our all-time favorite dudes on this show because we get into a lot of philosophical things with him. You guys are the defending national champs, but you're really not defending anything. You're trying to win another one. What was the mindset now going into this season, given your accomplishments from a year ago?
I think Coach handled it a little differently. You know, we talked about it a little more, but, you know, I think just the team culture that we have, we really didn't think about winning again or anything like that. It was more just kind of on to the next one. And, you know, I think since I've been here, this was the most focused guys have been this fall and, you know, just putting the work in. So I think it really is a testament to Coach and the way he handled it, but also the culture that we have as a team.
There is this thing about your red shirt that always fascinates me. Lars has talked about it with us, laughed a little bit. Now that it's all kind of passed and you're an established piece of the success at the University of Virginia, you feel like you're on schedule for what you want to accomplish as a lacrosse player, Connor?
I would like to think so. You know, it was definitely a little weird sitting out that extra year, and I think my body feels a little older, and maybe mentally I feel a little older as well. But, you know, I would like to think that I'm on track, but also our team is you know, we have a pretty cool opportunity to do something pretty special this year. And I think guys are definitely focused on the goal. And, you know, kind of going back to that culture that we have, you know, it's just fun to be a part of. And it's a huge honor.
Yeah, I watched some of the Syracuse match, and you guys were dominant, so explosive offensively. What about the challenge with North Carolina? What's the difference?
I think North Carolina is definitely a little younger this year, but, you know, they always come out, they fly around. You know they're going to have high energy on a Thursday night game at home. So, you know, I think just kind of, you know, weathering that storm a little bit, getting into our stuff that we're planning on running, and, you know, really just having fun.
Connor, is Thursday night lacrosse kind of like Monday night football?
Yeah, a little bit. I'd almost compare it to, like, Sunday night football in a way. So, you know, it's really not much better. It's kind of where you want to be playing. It's usually top matchups, some of the highest level lacrosse in the country. So it's pretty cool to be a part of.
So a little bit more juice involved in this, just based on the stage alone, let alone the opponent, I'm guessing.
Yeah, definitely. There's something about just, you know, the lights and knowing it's going to be on ACC Network. And, you know, having played them three times last year, we know they're going to come out hot and want a little bit of revenge. So, you know, there's definitely something a little different about Thursday nights.
You lead the nation in assists. I know everybody loves to score, but you've got such great experience now at the highest level. What's more enjoyable for you, the perfect pass for a goal or to say, hey, guess what, I got this?
I think definitely the perfect pass, just because, you know, you get your teammates involved and, you know, we have some great guys on the inside that, you know, if you watch the highlights, they're making some ridiculous catches. Mm-hmm. You know, the things that Peyton Cormier and Xander Dixon are doing on the inside is pretty ridiculous. So definitely the assist.
Well, I'm going to tell you now, in terms of assists, I mean, 3 goals, 5 assists in the win against Hopkins, and now you turn around in Carolina on Thursday night. You guys are just explosive, period. I mean, it's fun to watch. That's the other thing, too. Lacrosse, you mentioned the network, and we've had this conversation as it relates to wrestling, maybe more so than people would imagine. But in lacrosse, I feel like the television coverage and the coverage period of the collegiate game has really started to spark here a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty cool. Any weekend now, you can kind of turn on a game, and I think ACC Network's been a huge part of that, just providing these games on Thursday nights or Saturday afternoon. So, you know, I think it's definitely great for the game, and, you know, you start to see some of these ridiculous plays that guys are making across the country, and, you know, the prime example of that might be Thursday night playing against Chris Gray. I mean, some of the goals he's been scoring this year are you know, pretty special. So it's been great for the game, being able to have the different angles highlights and stuff like that.
Connor, lacrosse is such a big deal on your campus. When you go to class, regular students know who you are?
Not too much. I don't think we've hit the football basketball level yet, but you know, maybe they do, but I doubt it.
I mean, I thought with that natty last year, given the way you dominated, that you know, that might have been a game changer on campus.
I wish a little bit more, but, you know, maybe they do. No free meals or anything yet, so not quite there.
You put the helmet on and walk across, you got a chance, you think, maybe?
Maybe. That might help a little bit.
Are they selling that number one jersey in the bookstore?
Come on, we got to be selling that, right?
Not yet. Hopefully, we're working on it, though. I don't know if they can put my name on the back, though.
Oh, they can. Name on the back, Connor. Let me tell you something.
This day of name, image, and likeness, if not, we need to get working on that because that is a opportunity. If you know what I'm talking about.
I'll have to send you guys one.
There you go. Before we let you go, traditional question, since you're making your debut with us, since you've been to the University of Virginia, what has been your hardest class?
Oh, boy. It might have to be the first one I took. Class about how things work. It's a physics class. I'm not a big science guy, so, you know, we rolled up to class with some of the older guys. It's a legendary professor, and pretty humbled in my college experience the very first week or two. I think I got a 9 out of 30 on the first test. So that was a good college moment, and definitely the hardest class that I took.
I was going to say 9 out of 30, Wes. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
That'd be in my neighborhood. Thank you. Connor, I want to make sure I got this right. It's a physics class, and they call it How Things Work?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's false advertising is what that is. That's all that is, how things work, and it's physics. That can't be good.
This is the premise, though. How Things Work is after that first test, you usually have the drop class. You say, sir, I need to get rid of this ASAP. That's how things work. That's how it does. That's the deal.
Hey, Connor. Good luck on Thursday night. Look forward to watching you guys. And tell Coach Tiffany we said hello. Look forward to seeing you down the road.
Will do. Thank you guys for having me on.
You bet. Connor Schellenberger.
Talented dude right there now. Let me tell you, for folks who have not watched lacrosse, let us do you a favor. Check out Virginia and watch Connor go to work. Yep. He is a star. Big time.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.